Blog Talk Radio.
You know why I didn't name you after me, Christopher?
Because you're going to be better than me.
Yes, I can see it in your eyes. No wasting your life on something you hate.
Not for my son.
You're going to college.
Yes,
maybe be
a doctor.
A scientist.
Huh? Yes. Or a senator. Christopher Wilson.
I can see it in your eyes. You are going to do something important. You're going to college.
Christopher, time for work.
My son is going to be special.
We've always had the dreams. Now we have the means. Please, support the United Negro College Fund. A mind is a terrible thing to waste.
You are now tuned into News Forum with Chinchilla Jonesia. News Forum is a syndicated radio program with over 7.8 million listeners worldwide. News Forum is brought to you by the OME Network and Looking Glass Entertainment. Hey everybody, this is your girl Chinchilla J, and welcome to another segment of News Forum. Tonight on News Forum, you will hear the stories of three wrongfully incarcerated men, Antonio Chavez, Pedro Reynoso, and Mike Swift. Their stories will be told by three women, Yvonne Chavez, Evelyn Reynoso, and Maggie Swift. So, keep it right there. Don't you go nowhere. News Forum will be right back after this. So sit back, relax, as I take you across the country, around the world, and back in 8 minutes with news to you. I am Chinchilla Jenkins. And, all right, news you can use. Today is Sunday, June 27th, 2021. In the state of Pennsylvania, they are still experiencing many, many glitches with their new unemployment system. The new system was supposed to be better than the old, outdated one, but there are more problems than before, and still thousands of people are without funds. There are even some people that have not had an unemployment check since the onset of the pandemic. And many people are still laid off. 2 weeks after Pennsylvania's $30 million unemployment system went online, hundreds of laid off workers are still struggling to get benefits. And that is an outrage. People are protesting this at the Capitol and even inside. When will they be paid? God only knows. Also, 9 states in this country will be ending their enhanced unemployment benefits on Saturday, which was yesterday, cutting off aid to more than 440,000 out-of-work adults. The Republican governors of the states argue that the benefits aren't necessary as the economy recovers, but workers and advocates say the loss of benefits will harm them. The states that are ending extra jobless benefits on June 19th, which was actually last Saturday, but more added this week. And it's just such a shame because they're all together, 26 states are cutting off pandemic aid before the federal funding expires in September. Only one of the states is run by a Democratic governor, and that is the state of Louisiana. But Alabama, Alaska, Idaho, Indiana, Nebraska, New Hampshire, North Dakota, West Virginia, and Wyoming all have ended funding. Also, Iowa, Mississippi, and Missouri have joined that group of jobless benefits. That's such a shame. Now, let us look at crazy stuff that's going on. Archaeologists. Okay, they have discovered a prehistoric human type previously unknown to science. So there's this unknown man that they have discovered. And it's really crazy because who knows what this thing is, okay? It looks like, if you can see the picture, it looks like something definitely from the prehistoric age. But this was discovered in an Israeli excavation. And the discovery of a new homo group in this region, not homosexual or anything like that. You know, back in the day, they used to call it Homo sapiens. And they were found all over the world, but this particular one was excavated in Israel. It resembles a pre-Neanderthal population in Europe, and it challenges the prevailing hypothesis that Neanderthals originated from Europe. Now, since this is a new find, what else will they find? Because archaeologists are always digging and trying to find all kinds of things, and who knows if these things are actually really real that they are actually finding, or are these things that they have fabricated and created to make it seem as though they are finding these things so that they can get money for them to be put in museums and different things like that. So those are things that we need to really think about. Is this really happening? Another thing that was found in Turkey, Turkey now, they found a castle from a lost kingdom. Now get this, a 2,800-year-old castle from the lost kingdom of Urartu. It was discovered in eastern Turkey. Wow, so see, these archaeologists are always digging all over the world. And this castle, they said, was under the ground. And they're finding more and more parts of the castle that was there during the medieval period. And, you know, this is like really crazy. So is that something that they really found? Or is it something, again, that they fabricated? Because that reign of Urartu, it spanned from the dates roughly from 860 BCE to 590 BCE. And the kingdom's end was very mysterious. So who knows what's going on with that? But anyway, these are things that I look at and say, wow, crazy stuff. Now, remember the riot on the Capitol, the Washington, D.C. Capitol? Remember that, riot. Well, we have a grandmother during that riot that has been sentenced. So she is actually the first person sentenced for that January 6th riot on the Capitol of the United States, you know? And that is really crazy. But thank goodness, finally somebody got sentenced. All of them should have been sentenced and charged, but they were not. But Anna Morgan Lloyd of Bloomfield, Indiana, was convicted of one count of parading in a federal building. And Reagan-appointed federal judge Royce Lamberth handed down a sentence of 3 years probation, a $500 civil restitution, and 40 hours of community service. Well, they might as well not have did anything with her, because that's nothing. I mean, to storm the Capitol like that, no. It should have been much greater of a sentence, but guess what? It was not. Jeez, what is this country doing? Well, let's look at Chinese in China, okay? Now, listen, Chinese mountain cats swap DNA with domestic cats but aren't their ancestors. So now they're actually trying to cross-breed the DNA between mountain cats and domestic cats, and they're different types of felines. So they're trying to mix and match these wildcats and domestic cats. And that's kind of crazy. So what is going to happen when that happens and slice those genes together? What are they trying to create? But this is what man does. They're always trying to create new things, and it's just crazy. This could turn out to be some type of a wild, violent cat that goes around and starts to kill people. Who knows what may happen from that? It's crazy. Well, in Miami, for those of you that have been vacationing in Florida, hopefully you were not in Miami at the Surf condos, because that condominium complex did collapse and people were injured. People still have not been found. There's still many people missing, and there was death. Now, according to authorities in that state, some people have also said that the condo had problems already prior to the collapse, that they had a lot of things going on in that condo and repairs that should have been made in the condo. But still, who knows why that condo collapsed the way it did. And there was a family from New Jersey who was actually staying at the condo at the time of the collapse. And that family were one of the lucky ones to escape. The two children, they were right at the edge of the collapse where their bedroom was, and it could have toppled over, but it didn't. And they're like wondering why. Why did God spare their lives? Well, they just need to be thankful that they did get their lives spared. And my heart and prayers go out to all of the families that are suffering a loss due to that collapse. Wow. In Philadelphia, Councilwoman Helen Gim, she has been arrested for going to the Capitol in Harrisburg, the state capital of Pennsylvania, to protest the education funding. And the senators did not want to allow her into their offices or anything. And she's a councilwoman from Philadelphia, but they didn't want to hear anything that had to do with funding for educational purposes here in the city of Philadelphia or across this state, which is a grave disgrace. Why not? They're spending all of these millions and billions of dollars on things that really don't need to be done. And of course, a lot of that money is being pocketed into the pockets and bank accounts and pocketbooks of those legislators, which is sad. But anyway, she was released the same day, but she stands up for justice and she's fighting for education in Philadelphia because the school district is horrible and it needs funding. But the state of Pennsylvania, they don't think so. They rather fund other things, and that is very, very sad, very sad. Also, what else is going on? Wow, here's another archaeological dig, this time in South Carolina, Charleston, South Carolina, to be exact. They actually unearthed what they called a rare slave badge. Whoa, a slave badge. Anyway, if you could see it, I don't know what to call it. What it looks like to me is like a piece of paper or some type of something or another. It looks ridiculous, but they said it's a slave badge. And it was found on a campus of the College of Charleston during excavations conducted ahead of a construction project. So guess what? They found this badge, and they said they back to the 19th century kitchen on the campus. Okay, so that's really crazy. So we'll find out more about that. If you're interested, you can find out about it. I'm really not interested, but I thought that that would be something good to share with you all because when I saw them, like, what? A slave badge? I didn't know they wore badges. Wow. Now, let us now talk about John McAfee. John McAfee, if you all have computers and laptops and all that stuff, some of you may have McAfee as your antivirus protection. Well, John McAfee died at the age of 78. George Floyd. You all know George Floyd, the case of Derek Chauvin. Well, Derek Chauvin has been sentenced. He's been sentenced 22 and a half years. A lot of people think that, hey, that's not enough because if the shoes were on the other feet, the charges would have been much greater. Probably no time out, no parole, life without parole. But Derek Chauvin, hey, he may only do 15 years behind bars and then be out. He tried to appeal his sentencing, but guess what? A judge said no. He was not going to allow that to happen. So on June 25th, the judge rejected his request for a new trial, indicating the defense didn't show any evidence of juror misconduct, either during trial or during jury selection, that warranted an evidentiary hearing. We'll see what happens in the end, because Derek Chauvin is still expected to appeal his conviction. The other three officers, Thomas Lane, J. Alexander Quain, and Tao Thiel, will stand trial in March of 2022 for aiding and abetting second-degree murder and aiding and abetting second-degree manslaughter. Well, now the last thing I want to talk to you tonight about is, guess what? Yep, you got it. The coronavirus. Oh, boy. The coronavirus. Right now, worldwide infections are at 181,851,932. Worldwide deaths, 3,938,720. United States of America is still the epicenter for this coronavirus pandemic, with 34,494,677 infections, 619,424 deaths. India is second, 30,278,963. Brazil is third, 18,420,590. Brazil is second for deaths with 513,544. India is third with 396,761. Then fourth is France, Russia, Turkey, United Kingdom, Argentina, Italy, and Colombia make up your top 10 countries worldwide with the most coronavirus infections out of all 220 infected countries and territories. In the United States of America, California is still the epicenter with 3,816,358 infections, 63,588 deaths. Texas is second, Florida is third, New York, Illinois, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Ohio, New Jersey, North Carolina make up the top 10 states in the United States of America with the most coronavirus infections. In the state of Pennsylvania, of course, Philadelphia is still the epicenter with 154,392 coronavirus infections, 3,761 coronavirus deaths. In the state of Pennsylvania, guess what? They're going to be lifting the mask mandate. And guess what? You don't have to wear a mask anymore, people. So, geez. That's going to be done on the 28th. So already people are not wearing a mask. And on the 28th, guess what? There are going to be lots of them without a mask. Also, veteran actor Robert Hogan dies at age 87. Wow. So there has been a lot of deaths. Every week there are lots of deaths and everything going on in this country with different celebrities and people we all know. So. Anyway, that is it for News You Can Use. I'm Chinchilla J. Hey, everybody. This is your girl, Chinchilla Janice, a.k.a. Chinchilla J, and welcome to another segment of News Forum. Tonight on News Forum, here are three compelling stories of wrongful convictions. Cries of innocence from behind prison walls. As we take you from the East Coast to the West Coast. Pedro Reynoso was convicted of a double homicide, sentenced to life in prison. Pedro was arrested at the age of 33. He is now 60 years old. He has spent 27 years behind bars. At the time of the double murder, Pedro has a passport that shows he was in the Dominican Republic. The murder took place in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, here in the United States of America. Pedro was in to the Dominican Republic, July 13th of 1991. The murder took place July 23rd of 1991. Why is Pedro in jail? Why was Pedro convicted of this double homicide when he was not even in this country? With me tonight to tell Pedro's story is his wife, Evelyn Reynoso. Evelyn has been relentlessly fighting for her husband's freedom, and she will not stop. She will not give up until Pedro is released. All right, so we're going to hear the story of Pedro Reynoso right now, told by his wife, Evelyn Reynoso. Evelyn, how are you tonight?
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, can you hear me?
How are you tonight?
I'm okay, and you?
I'm good. All right, Evelyn, so I know that, you know, you have been fighting very hard to get your husband released from prison. And this case is so overwhelming, and the evidence plainly shows that your husband could not have committed this crime of a double homicide. You know, he could not have committed. He was not even here in the state. He wasn't even in the city. He wasn't even in this country. He was in the Dominican Republic with a passport that is stamped to prove that. So can you tell us about this case, Evelyn?
Yes, you're correct about that. My husband was in the Dominican Republic. He left Philadelphia July 13th, 1991. These homicides occurred July 23rd, 1991. And he entered back to the United States March 23rd, 1994, when he was arrested at the Newark Airport, and he's been incarcerated since that day.
Wow, that's just so very sad. And oh jeez, so now he's been in prison for 27 years, and they have the evidence with the passport, a stamped passport, and yet they still convicted him. And I mean, this case is a case like no other, because, I mean, a passport shows clearly where you were, because in order for him to come back to the United States, they would have had to stamp the passport upon entry. And, you know, this is just really crazy, crazy, crazy. And Evelyn, now in the Dominican Republic, I know talking with you before, you said that there are witnesses that, you know, and alibis that he has over there that can contest to, attest to where he was. And what is going on? Have they tried to get in touch with anyone from the Dominican Republic at all? Have they tried to do anything to gather that information?
Yes, I flew out to the Dominican Republic myself last year, August, and the integrity unit interviewed all the alibi witnesses. Pedro conceived a child there by the name of Nayeli Reynoso, and she was born April 22nd, 1992. In the Dominican Republic, you have to sign a birth certificate, and it's in their files with Pedro's signature that stays in the government's office there. And they have copies of that. They spoke to the daughter. She's his identical twin. I mean, no DNA has to be done whatsoever because she looks just like him. Mm-hmm. All the alibi witnesses, his son was baptized in the Dominican Republic July 27, 1991, 4 days after the homicides here in Philadelphia. And he is in the Dominican Republic. There's a picture there. He's there with his baby mother, the son's mother, and he's there with Godfather, the father that flew down with the Dominican Republic, that seen him at the airport, testified, and they didn't believe him. They both have the same stamp in the passport. The father was met up with Pedro in Puerto Rico because he was flying to the Dominican Republic. Since they were from the same township, they saw each other in Puerto Rico because they had a flight land in Puerto Rico, and then it goes to the Dominican Republic. And they were in the same flight to the Dominican Republic. And he was there baptizing Pedro's son. His name is Juan Alexander. Juan Alexander Reynoso now resides here in Philadelphia. And is truly fighting for his father's freedom. He lost all his father's. He didn't have a father since he was 6 years old. But he doesn't know a lot of English, so there's only so much he can do. He wants to actually speak online, but he speaks Spanish, totally Spanish.
Okay. Well, that would have been fine. You could have translated for him. That would have been fine. This case is just one that I just have no words for, because I just can't understand why this has happened to him, why he's still behind bars 27 years. That's just horrible. And now Pedro, now he's 60 years old now. And I know you shared with me he had some health issues.
Yes, he had colon cancer, stage 3 colon cancer. And now he has diabetes, which is something he didn't have. It's not generic because it doesn't come from his family. I guess with all the stress that he's going through in there, trying to fight himself for his freedom, it's really killing him. Like, his diabetes is out of control. They just did a couple tests on him, and I believe the biopsy that they did came back perfect for him. But still, you know, he's still sitting in jail, and he didn't commit a crime. You got the alibi. You got the sister's victim coming to the Philadelphia Inquirer telling them, I know who killed my brother, but nobody will listen. That article was out there. Why would she come? Why would I come to the news and say, man didn't kill my brother? If you killed my brother, you know?
Right. Wow. And so she said she knows who killed her brother, but they would not listen to her testimony?
Yeah, it's in the Philadelphia Inquirer. It says, I know who killed my brother, but no one would listen. This person died last year, the year before last, 2019, of cancer.
Mm. Wow.
But she spoke to the Philadelphia Inquirer, and it's in there. If you go Google Pedro Reynoso, it's up there. It says, I know who killed my brother, but no one would listen.
Wow. That is just really ridiculous. So now, where the murder took place, Evelyn, was it in a highly drug-infested area?
Yes, it was.
Okay. All right. And my gathering is it more than likely had something to do with drugs, that double homicide. And either the detectives, it sounds like they're covering up, and they're withholding all kinds of evidence, the prosecutorial misconduct, everything is happening with this case. It's like, oh my geez, it's just horrible what they've done to Pedro. And something definitely needs to be done, because he is clearly a man that could not have committed this crime. And I just don't understand why he is still in jail. I don't understand why he was convicted in the first place, because they had all of the evidence that they needed that did not point to Pedro. So this is just crazy. And I know he was up for commutation. Was that in 2019?
Yeah, it was 2019. And it was held under advisement because they're fighting it through the courts. And I understand that you can't come out of commutation without a conviction, and they can't give him a conviction if he's innocent. So that wasn't the best way for him to come out. It was the fastest way, but we were understanding because of his health. We got to the point that, you know, just let him go home. We don't want him to die in prison. As you see the episode, that's all he says. I don't want to die in here. I didn't kill anybody. So that was the way for him to come out, but there's impossible for him, an innocent person, to come out of commutation. So they held it under advisement to see what happens in court. And we're still waiting. I guess the pandemic held everything off. I just hope they move forward. And
yes, I hope they do too, because he does not need to be behind bars. He's clearly innocent. and he's been in there for 27 years, and he has health issues, stage 3 colon cancer and diabetes. He definitely should be released. He should be released on a compassionate release, you know, without them even going into all of that, holding that advisement and all that and waiting for the courts. They need to release him and then deal with everything else later with all the other stuff. But he definitely needs to be out of that prison. And it's just such a grave injustice that they've done to him. Grave injustice.
He has a father. He has a father, which he calls like on a weekly basis in the Dominican Republic. His father's 90 years old. His father got a visa and came to see him here in the prison. And every time he speaks to him, I'm sometimes in the phone call. And all he says is, I just want you to come home. I don't want to die without you being home. And that kills him more. That destroys him more because he feels like he didn't do anything. And he feels like he betrayed his family. And it's not him. He didn't kill anybody.
Wow.
So his father, all he says is, I'm waiting for you. God forbid this man dies, he's not going to see his son come home.
Right. That is so very sad. 90 years old. Wow.
90 years old.
That is so sad. That's so sad. Now, Evelyn, my heart really goes out to you, to your family, to Pedro's children, and to his dad, and to all of you. And I just hope and pray that Philadelphia will right their wrong when it comes to Pedro Reynoso, that he will be released. Yeah. And hopefully it'll be before the end of this year. Hopefully it will be within the next month or so that they release him because, I mean, all they have to do is just release the man, just release him. All the evidence shows that he's innocent. It's just so sad. My heart goes out to you and to your family. And definitely keep me posted with what goes on. You know, whenever you hear something, just, you know, call me, email me, text me. Let me know what's going on with his case because I am very, very interested in his case. And I'm praying for you and for him. And I thank you so much for sharing his story with us tonight. And just stay on the line in case someone has questions for you. Evelyn, great. Okay? Yes.
Okay, great. I thank you so much.
Thank you for coming on and sharing Pedro's story with us. All right, everybody. I do have a special guest on, a surprise special guest tonight, Maggie. I'm not Maggie, I'm sorry. Maggie is not a surprise guest. My surprise special guest is Caroline Turner, who is a criminal defense attorney, and she is going to be weighing in on these cases as she listens to them to give her input. So, Caroline, I am going to invite you to speak a little bit on what you just heard about Evelyn and Pedro.
Hi, there, Chinchilla and Evelyn. And
hi.
I'm so sorry to hear what you've been going through, Evelyn, and what Pedro has gone through. It's absolutely astounding to me that somebody could have been in jail for 27 years when he was actually out of the country and had all those alibi witnesses. And despite looking up on Google, I can't seem to find information about how this came to be that he was convicted when he had such a great alibi, because he had a really bad attorney, or was it that people just didn't do the investigation properly? What is it that caused him to be convicted in the first place? Because this sounds like it's the most solid alibi you could have.
What we're understanding, me and Pedro, what we really understand now is that when he was questioned by other people that questioned him about the case, he feels that the attorneys didn't bring the subpoena the witnesses to come out and say anything. That's why the district attorney's office did the investigation, which his son flew down with me, and we did all the investigation via Zoom at a property that we have over there in the Dominican Republic. the father was there, the one that was there, some lady named Viva was there that seen them during that time in Dominican Republic. The notary guy, that the lawyer that did the paperwork to the land was there. They interviewed him. He had a child in the Dominican Republic during the time that he was at the Dominican Republic, which was July 13, 1991, till March 23, 1994. This child was born April 22, 1992. How can he not be at the Dominican Republic if you arrested him when he entered the United States through Newark Airport? And he himself voluntarily signed his extradition to Philadelphia because he said, I didn't kill anybody. We're going to resolve this. He's still waiting 27 years later to fix this problem.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, that happens a lot with people who are innocent. They think that the truth will set them free, and it's the opposite in the criminal justice system. The people who do best in the system are those who don't actually trust it, which is why we always are bad to give statements, because they can be twisted and turned around. And because the system itself doesn't necessarily celebrate the truth, and it's really sad to say that, but the truth does not set you free in the criminal justice system. And I have had so many clients who have come in saying, I turned myself in, I've got nothing to hide, I'm innocent, and then things have gone really badly for them. Because anything that they do say can be twisted around, and it becomes a question of proving your innocence as opposed to having that presumption of innocence in the system. If you say nothing at all, you're in a much better position, even though the police will chide you that if you were innocent, you would speak, you would say something. You know, the police always generally do that because they say, if you've got nothing to hide, then you can speak to us. And, you know, it's only if you're guilty that you don't want to talk. But actually, our right, you know, to remain silent is so sacred. And it is especially sacred and important when you do have nothing to hide, that you say absolutely nothing, let them prove the case. And I can't emphasize it enough. I've had so many clients who've thought that they can extricate themselves from the bind that they've found themselves in, even when they're totally innocent, by turning themselves in and coming and speaking to the police and all the rest of it. But that doesn't change the fact that in this case, it is so outrageous that he wasn't in the country, that, you know, there's this child who was born over there, that he, you know, I can't imagine what kind of a defense attorney he had, because it is outrageous to me that a prosecution, knowing that he was out of the country, that a defense attorney knowing that he was out of the country, it's just outrageous to me. I mean, I know sometimes DAs and prosecutors want to get a conviction, but when you know that kind of information, how can you in any good faith allow somebody to be convicted? I know it happens all the time, but this is a horrible case. It's a truly shocking case. Sorry?
You know, when Pedro got arrested, he didn't know a lot of English. The fact that the jury believed two witnesses that recanted their testimony back in 2010, they believed the witnesses that it was clean facial man, heavy built. Pedro was like 125 pounds, size 28 pants. That's the way I met him. He had a blown, big mustache, and this lady said he didn't have any facial hair. He had white hair. Pedro was 32 years old back then. Skinny man. If you see him in the picture, really dark skin. And then he's baptizing his son 4 days later after the murder with a big mustache. You're identifying somebody that has clean facial hair. 4 days later, how do you grow a mustache that big?
Exactly.
And then you believe
these people.
Pedro is known, his nickname and known in his country is Papitico. His arrest warrant says Paporito. Like they didn't have anything on him. They didn't know who he was. They didn't have a mugshot. They didn't have anything. Pedro's been incarcerated for 27 years over he said, she said.
So it was somebody identifying him. Were they trying to... I think you said that they knew who did it and it wasn't him, if I heard you right.
What is it? What is it? I'm sorry?
That the person said they knew who did it. They came out later and said they knew who
the
did
sister,
it and
the
it wasn't
sister
him.
Of one of the victims says, I know who killed my brother. It's in the Philadelphia Inquirer. I know who killed my brother, but no one would listen. If you Google that, you'll see the whole testimony. But this woman died
right.
in 2019. She died of cancer. But I believe they have a statement. I don't know if they have a statement or not, but I believe they do have a statement. But
wow.
How can the jury believe
so very sad.
Two random people that are, they had drug cases or they had, they were into drugs, and then you can't believe a father that's baptizing, the government can't believe a father that's baptizing a child, and you're in the picture right there, and the jury believes two crackheads?
That's unbelievable.
And then when he's in the, Pedro told me that when he's in the room, they said, can you identify the person that murdered? And they couldn't identify him. Samuel Wilkinson, one of the other guys, they couldn't identify him.
Wow.
Wow. That's
so there was a woman who did identify him and then recanted.
Yeah,
the jury went with that, I guess.
They recanted. They gave a testimony. They said that she did 5 years in prison, and she did 5 years in prison, and she knows what it is to be in jail, and she knows that he did not kill the guys. This happened at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. How them guys got murdered, everybody seen it. Pedro was in the Dominican Republic. He had property receipts that he bought a property in the Dominican Republic.
Wow.
He stayed in the Dominican Republic because his mother was sick.
Mm-mm-mm.
So he decided to take care of her. Decided to come back in 1994, and he gets arrested.
Wow. That
he tries to do the
sad.
Right thing. He tries to do the right thing. He tries to hand himself in, and he doesn't speak the language. Oh, my God, this is horrible.
Yeah, it is. The case
it's
is
really horrible.
So
they were just trying to pin it on someone.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Evelyn, I thank you again for sharing your story. And just stay on the line in case someone else later wants to say something to you or have some
Evelyn.
Questions. Yes. And again, thank you again for coming on and sharing the story of Pedro Reynoso. All right. We're going to go now to our next guest. And those of you that are on and you would like to comment or say something concerning these cases, you need to press 1. So if you're on via your phone, just press 1 and you'll be placed in the caller queue. And we will do our best to get to you live on the air to share whatever you have to share tonight. Those of you that are listening via the World Wide Web, if you would like to comment, talk, or vent tonight, you must dial 516-453-9133. Again, that's 516-453-9133, and then press 1 to talk. All right, you're tuned in to News Forum with Chinchilla J. Tonight, cries of innocence behind prison walls. Our next guest tonight is
Murder in Quakertown. Michael Warren Swift was arrested and convicted in 1988 at the age of 24, for first-degree murder for the murder of Ernest C. Meese. Mike has been incarcerated for 33 years. He is now 57 years old. There is no evidence to show that Mike pulled the trigger of the gun that killed Edward Meese. To tell Michael's story tonight is his sister, Maggie Swift, who has been relentlessly fighting for the release of her brother. Also, hear from others in the Swift family, as well as the victim's family, in support of Michael. All right. Hello, Maggie. How are you tonight?
Hi. Hi, Chinchilla. I'm really good. Thank you for including us today.
Oh, sure. No problem. All right. So now I'm just going to get right into it and allow you to tell us the story of your brother's case.
Oh, certainly. In 1988, my brother, his wife, and their baby were at a local flea market. My brother had a warrant for his arrest, and that was on a harassment-type charge that he was being, you know, on the warrant. He was approached by a state trooper. He got out of the car. He and the officer got in a scuffle, were on the ground. And a second state trooper then approached the scene. As that scuffle was happening, an innocent bystander approached the scene and was shot. And unfortunately, it was a fatal shot, and it killed him immediately. During the trial, it was never established that my brother either pulled the weapon between he and the officer that caused the shot, or that when he stood up from that struggle with the weapon, that that's what shot Mr. Meese. In fact, there's lots of evidence to the contrary. Ballistics cleared my brother of having control of the weapon during the struggle based on the burn marks on his body. And just, you know, logistically being cleared even by the FBI who examined the gun. What impresses me as I think about not just my brother, whom I love and we want to come home, is that the victim's family, Mrs. Meese, the widow, until her recent death, was very supportive of my brother being innocent in the death of her husband. Now, this whole scene happened because there was a warrant from my brother. We didn't come from the best of homes in terms of security and safety. Our childhood home was very violent. And I say that knowing there are other facets of my family that were just wonderful and great. But in our household, it was very violent as children. And in fact, in 1980, our father did murder our mother. And in that very rural, small town, that case was like a tornado. Anyone associated with the case, even defense, finally felt the wrath of my dad, Joe Swift, to the point that he threatened and harassed everyone. At one point from prison, he sent a package to the district attorney, and instead of opening the package, the district attorney called Bomb Squad. So the package was cleared, wow. And in the newspaper, he sort of laughed it off, but fast forward, that district attorney then became the judge for my brother's case. It's a very small town back then. We didn't even have 911. You had to dial an operator. So I know that the judge for my brother's case was very well aware of my brother, his history, and clearly had an impression made about my brother's family through my father. The records that you'd write to the court to get, anyone could because of public access, aren't there. There's no transcripts available, at least not to this very minute that I'm talking to you. So what I've tried to look at is how to put this together. There was extensive newspaper and some television coverage of both trials, but definitely my brother, because the headline is Son of the Murderer you know, move it forward. I was extremely fortunate to speak with the Meese family recently. Mrs. Meese has passed away, but two of her children remain very adamant that Michael did not shoot or kill their father. And to me, that is, you know, I almost have no words for the values people will hold on to. It would seem so easy for people or a victim's family to say, great, they caught this guy, there was a warrant, put it on him, let's move on. But they have their own reasons why they say they know and believe Michael didn't do this. I try to be very clear, and I'll do so even tonight with this is about process that broke down. This is about the extension of power and authority that was really misused. Every individual who participated in this has a name. The defendant has a name. The victim has a name. The judge has a name. But we're not here to bash those individuals. We're here, you know, my goal is look at the process and where this broke down. My brother's team attempted an appeal. The convicting common plea judge denied the appeal. The team wanted to take it to Superior Court, and the convicting judge denied that to happen as well. So there's a lot of authority happening that seemed to block moving up with this, as well as during the trial. It was a bench trial. And I try to post on my Facebook page, Clemency for Mike Swift, some of the transcripts I receive or some of the news articles, and you can read and see quite clearly where the defense wasn't even allowed to present a full case. At one point, they're asking in conversationally to, can we verify which gun we're talking about? The district attorney objected and the judge sustained. I mean, so they can't even clarify defense-wise, wait, which weapon is under discussion right now? There was not a full roster allowed to be called by the defense. I know the victim's son, who was at the scene very shortly after the shooting, wanted to give his statement and testify, and neither were taken or claimed for him. So, you know, my brother's not a saint, but he didn't commit first-degree murder. And this is really an excessive sentence and a cruel sentence for life without parole. And so, yeah, I appreciate your time for us to speak about this.
Sure, no problem, Maggie. Yeah, this is a troubling case as well. For him to be convicted of first-degree murder, meaning it was premeditated with intent to kill. To me, I don't know. It's like we're the transcripts. It's like a cover-up. It sounds like cover-up is going on there because of the scuffling that the officer is more than likely the one to have accidentally shot the innocent bystander. And this is what it seems like to me, Maggie, that they're trying to cover that up when, you know, clearly the whole thing was an accident for anyone to be murdered doing that. And if they would have just, you know, allowed that officer to, you know, stand trial or whatever for that, your brother would not be behind bars. And it seems as though since there was a history of, different types of behavior from your brother and, you know, the family history of your dad and, you know, it's like they've already, you know, had their minds made up, okay, we're going to frame him for the murder. And it seems to me that's what they did. What do you think about that, Caroline?
I feel, again, I was just looking at your Facebook page, Maggie, and seeing that the defense attorney wasn't even allowed to really present evidence about how many shots were fired and what the ballistics were, that he was shut down because it was beyond the scope of direct, is what I saw briefly looking at it right now. And it sounds like, you know, there was bias from the judge because he was the DA from what you were saying, and that this could not have been a fair trial from the very beginning. It seems like, you know, the one thing that the jury would really need to know is what bullets killed the victim, and they weren't allowed to hear that evidence, which is absolutely outrageous, because how can you prove beyond a reasonable doubt that somebody killed a person if you can't prove what weapon the bullets came from?
I can tell you two things that might be pertinent is, first, the widow did sue the police officers. She was greatly pressured by the then district attorney as well as law enforcement to include my brother in her lawsuit, and she refused to do that and even needed a judge to ask the people pressuring her to cease. But in her lawsuit, the officers were found not guilty because their attorney argued there's no way this scene could have been premeditated. No one knew Mr. Meese. No one knew Mr. Meese would be there. So certainly a first-degree conviction or even a conviction of murder, 1-2, would be outrageous. And secondly, FBI reports are very clear that the weapon they received to examine was not in the condition it would have been at the time of the scene. As well, the bullets that they received were each in a vial, and the vials were broken. The seals were broken when the FBI received those.
So the evidence had been tampered with.
That's what I would say, but I'm just a social worker. I don't see that said that way, documented that way. I don't see how that comes back to the court for the court to even consider it. My global understanding is all of this was just summarily dismissed.
Wow. That's, this is just ridiculous. Wow.
So,
ladies, I'm going to ask you to...
Sorry.
Oh, go ahead, Caroline.
I'm just asking if the appeal was exhausted and did they have a post-conviction relief hearing after? Is there an effective assistance of counsel claim?
I am open for legal help because I don't understand those particular levels and steps up. I know it was denied to go to superior. After that, there were several attorneys who came on the case and then dropped it. So I think people signed on but didn't move it forward. And I don't know if that's only because the convicting judge blocked that or for whatever reason they didn't pursue it. So we have applied to the fabulous Conviction Integrity Unit now that's in all of Pennsylvania, not just Philadelphia. And so I'm hoping they'll know or can at least explain that to me, because if there's a chance to take this before a judge, we are pulling all stops and take a loan on everything to have that happen. I don't know about the post-conviction where that went or didn't go.
Well, if he couldn't get an appeal, then he wouldn't get that. Oh, my gosh. I'm so sorry, Maggie. Please contact me at any time. I'll do what I can to help, I promise. I'm so sorry.
Yes. And Maggie and Caroline, just stay right there for a moment. I need to take a caller right now. And after the caller, we're actually going to bring on the youngest daughter of the victim. All right. So caller number one, you're live on the air with News Forum. How are you tonight?
Good evening, Chinchilla Queen Sister. How are you this evening?
I am fine. Hi, Derek. How are you?
I'm well. I'm well. I wanted to let you know that I'm enjoying your show tonight. And I wanted to congratulate News Forum anchor Chinchilla J on her ONE syndicated station all-time connection record with her 23rd all-time connection, signed with the all-time new host connection record in one year held by Terrence Strength. So congratulations.
Wow. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you, Derek. Thank you so much. All right. That's great news. All right, so now we're going to get back to the story of this case of Mike Swift, and we're going to bring on Julie Meese, who is the youngest daughter of the victim. We're going to bring her on now. Julie, how are you tonight?
I'm doing well, but biting my tongue.
Okay. And first of all, I am so sorry about your dad. So sorry.
Thank you. Thank you. Can I just correct that his name is Ernest Carl Meese Jr.?
Okay. And
because
his
father is Ernest Carl Meese Sr., who passed away exactly 9 weeks later of a massive heart attack.
Oh, wow. Sorry to hear that as well. Oh, my gosh. Wow. All right. So now, Julie, at the time of your dad's murder, how old were you at that time?
I was a month away from being 12.
Okay. And now, what has prompted you to stand in support of Mike Swift?
Well, that night, so many different things transpired, including the fact that I had to tell my brother, who had just gotten engaged that night. I had to tell my mother. My sister, who was working with my dad, already had an inclination what was going on. And obviously it forever changed our lives. I'm sorry, what was the question? Because my head just goes back to that. And I remember all of the transpirings from that night. So I apologize. What was your question?
Oh, what prompted you to stand in support of Mike?
The second I saw him, I didn't even see him. The elevator doors opened, and he was standing there shackled with the guards, I guess, with him. And I just said, he didn't do it. He didn't do it. And over the years, my brother has had contact with him, my mom had contact with him, and we have always believed that he is not the one who pulled the trigger. Yes, he may have been involved. Yes, he resisted arrest. Yes, he deserved to be in prison. Does he deserve to be labeled a murderer? No. He did not murder my father. And I will go to my grave believing that. And my mom went to hers believing that. So, you know, as I, like Maggie said, you know, we recently met and I told her and I told Mike's ex-wife that it is my goal to make sure that he has the ability to have a relationship with his daughter outside of a prison cell. I had a relationship with my dad, no matter how short it was. But his daughter does not need to have a relationship with a man convicted of murder when he did not murder my dad.
Wow. That is, this is just so incredible. This is really incredible. Wow. Julie, I thank you for taking time out to come on to this show tonight and to share your emotions and your feelings and your thoughts and what's in your heart tonight. I really appreciate you coming on, sharing that with everybody. And, you know, that means so much. And that you're standing in support of Mike and in your heart. You don't believe that he did it. And, you know, your mom didn't believe that he did it. And, you know,
and
this is incredible.
Over a few short months of messaging with him, because I found there's like a way you can email or message with people incarcerated, I have learned more about this man, and he has the most tender soul, and he doesn't want to hurt people. He wants to help them. I mean, his only, in 32 years of being incarcerated, his only write-up was befriending wildlife. I mean, where do you ever find that? You know, this man has, you know, he cares about people. Why would he want to take my father's life? He did not. He did not.
Wow. Wow. I really appreciate your time. And hopefully you will come on to when we do the Cries of Innocence from Behind Prison Walls podcast, on the video podcast. I would definitely love to have you on there. And thank you again so much, Julie, for your time tonight, and just continue listening. People may have questions for you later, so continue to listen. And at this time, before we go to the next guest, Evelyn just messaged me, and she said that Pedro's son, Juan Alexander, he did want to say something. So we're going to try to get Juan on and see what he has to say. His friend is going to speak for him because he does not speak great English, and he definitely wants to talk tonight. So we're going to try to get him on. And in the meantime, the next guest, and Maggie, thank you so much for calling in tonight and sharing the story of your brother, Michael. And keep listening, Maggie, because someone else may have questions for you as well. All right, so we're going to now, before we bring on Juan, we're going to come back to Juan, but we're going to go ahead over to the West Coast, because tonight is East Coast to the West Coast. And over on the West Coast, we have a wrongfully incarcerated man in San Diego, California. So we're going to bring the guests on now for our next guest, for Antonio Chavez.
Murder in Southern California. Antonio Chavez was arrested at the age of 22 in 1997 for the murder of Leonard Flores. Antonio is now 46 years old and has been behind bars for 24 years. Even with many discrepancies during trial and in the evidence of discovery, Antonio was still convicted and sentenced 29 years to life. Was it a shotgun or was it a handgun? These are the questions that need to be answered. Also, the height of the perpetrator and so many other things are in question. To tell the story of Antonio Chavez tonight is Antonio's sister, Yvonne Chavez. We will also hear from Antonio's brother and other family members, as well as the victim's mother. All right, Yvonne, how are you tonight? Welcome to News Forum. How are you tonight, Yvonne?
Yvonne, you're online. Thank you.
Yes, I'm great. Thanks for asking.
Okay. All right, so your brother, Antonio, he's been incarcerated now for 24 years, and he's now 46, arrested at 22, now 46 years old. And, you know, this case is really mind-boggling to me. You have support letters from the victim's mother, the victim's cousin, as well as the victim's girlfriend in support of your brother, and none of them believe that your brother killed Leonard. And
yeah,
this is really incredible, as you just heard the story of Mike Swift and the victim's daughter, Julie, does not believe that Mike killed her father, and her mother did not as well. And now your case, the same thing here. You have family of the victim that are standing in support of Antonio. Can you tell me about this case, Yvonne?
Okay. It's very complicated, but I'll try to make my way to everything. But as you said, there is a lot of inconsistencies, and much of what the witnesses said, there's two witnesses. I don't know if I can say their names, but it was Ms. Krem and Ms. Valenzuela. And their testimony was not based off of certainty. They based it off of who was tall, who was taller, who was the shortest one, and their clothes. And this was evident in the not only the court testimony, but in their interrogation. And it's not only Antonio Chavez that got wrongfully arrested and convicted. It's his friend, Jose Beltran. He was 17 at the time. And when they were arrested, the victim was also a minor, his girlfriend and their friend. Everybody on both sides were taken to LAPD without parent consent. They were interrogated without parent consent. Even the adults were asking for legal representation, and they were denied that. Some of the, you know, my brother's friends, which were also considered suspects, they have stories of being mistreated beyond, you know, police force or extra force. They were not allowed to make certain phone calls. Their handcuffs were really tight. They were left, you know, yelling in the jail cells. A lot of inconsistencies from the investigating reports down to detectives. You know, you mentioned the height of Antonio. The girlfriend in the interrogation, which they didn't use in the court testimony, she said, and she was referencing a detective. She was talking to the partner detective, Brenda Polly, and she told him, you know, the tallest one was a little bit taller than me, but not as tall as him. And it was mentioned by, you know, one of the witnesses, Marlene Krem. She said that maybe that detective was 6'2", and my brother stands at 6'3". So if a surviving victim that was there, she saw when these two suspects walked right past her, she noticed a gun on the shortest guy's hand, and she ran to her boyfriend's aid. So if she was able to see more at eye level, you know, and these witnesses were on the second level of the apartment looking down, I don't see how they can have a description or an idea of height if they're on the second level. And they didn't use a testimony of the surviving victim, which is the girlfriend, because it didn't fit their narrative. So she specifically said, you know, he's a little bit taller than me, but not as tall as him. Right now she's 5'5". this happened when she was 14. So she was maybe 5 feet, just a little bit over. And Marlene Cram, you know, in court, she couldn't identify my brother's friends. They asked her, do you know, the second suspect, and she identified my brother. And then the second one, like, she had no idea. And that's because in court, you know, when they're asking her about this, okay, were they in the shadow? Where did you see them? So Marlene had a lot of inconsistencies, like, oh, they were in the, well, he was in the shadow, but then he moved away from the shadow. And, you know, I saw, you know, the second suspect, which is my brother, I saw him with the shotgun. But then again, she says that, you know, she saw him run when she opened the door. So there's a lot of inconsistencies as far as time, what she saw, what happened. And this happened across the second, you know, witness's testimony, Nainin Valenzuela. And just to add kind of, you know, a little factor behind everything, I had been trying to help my brother for a long time. I came across these witnesses because I was dating someone that knew them, heard that they were bragging about it, and they were in suspicion that they weren't telling the truth. So I did come across Marlena, and, you know, her husband did allow me to talk to her. And that day that we spoke, I was with my then boyfriend, you know, she was with her husband, and she felt bad. You know, she told the truth. She said, you know what, I barely saw their faces, but yet in court testimony, she says she saw the tallest suspect's face, you know, but again, she contradicts herself a lot in court as well. So her husband became irate and told her, you don't do that. You see what you've done. You know, that's the raza, meaning that's our race. And he had told her that you have to fix this. And then when she described the suspects to me there, she said, I remember like if it was yesterday, the tall one was light and the, you know, the short one was dark. And I had a picture of my brother and I so badly wanted to show her, but my brother's tall and dark, as you know, you have in your picture, and the other guy is short and light. And I didn't show it to her because I didn't want, you know, to put that image in her head and so she can correct herself. But I let her know, hey, you got it wrong. And at that moment, she let me know that the second one is Lailin, that she never really had a chance to see anything. So she was in actuality borrowing Marlene's story, because when the cops arrived, they were able to exchange their story before the lineup, during the lineup, and even after the lineup. And I can get more into detail later, but I do want to mention that Scott is here. He's my brother's alibi. Also Richard, he was also there. It was a group of 10 or so people hanging out. When they heard the shots fired, kind of like a street where, kind of like a corner. It's not like a rectangle street. I don't know how to describe it, but it's at an angle. So around where they were hanging around, just around the corner, that's where the murder took place. So that night we didn't, no, we lost three individuals. Leonard, you know, I went to school with. Scott has memories of him too. They were more, he was more our age. And, you know, but people don't realize that we didn't just lose Leonard. We lost my brother and we lost Jose. Jose was 17. He never had, you know, adulthood here. My brother was just starting, you know, 22, just starting his life. And they got robbed of that. So essentially, three young men, you know, were never able to live the rest of their life like they should have. And when the murder took place, there were some cops having lunch, LAPD. They were having lunch around the corner. So when they heard the gunshots, they responded towards the way where, you know, where it occurred. And things happened so fast, but it's just, I want to point out that the witness testimony, the way they describe things is like too much detail for so little time. And, you know, when, of course, when defense goes up there, they break it down. You can tell, that's when you can tell their inconsistencies and their lies. And not only that, these officers, the detectives are the ones that wrote the report. And, you know, one said that he borrowed a paragraph from another detective's report. And Lailene, I believe, she's the one that went in court saying, hey, I didn't say this. So we don't know exactly which part is possibly plagiarized, possibly, you know, they try to say that they paraphrased what she said, but she said, I did not say that. So that's another concern. But from here, I think I'll let Scott and Richard take it on because they can tell you as soon as the shot, you know, got fired, what happened from then on.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Yvonne. Okay. Now, is Richard on a call, on the call, or is he there with you?
He's on the call.
Okay. So, Richard, you need to press 1 so that my producer can get you on the line live on the air. So make sure you press 1 now so he can get you on.
Okay.
And Richard is Antonio's alibi. All right. So I'm not sure if my producer sees him yet. So
we'll continue to go on.
Scott's on.
Yeah.
Now Scott's on the call. Okay. All right, so we'll try to get Scott on. Just text me the last 4 of Scott's number so I can get him on the line.
Okay.
Okay, and, so this case is another case that is very disturbing with all of the factors here of just everything with the eyewitness and all that stuff. It's just really crazy. The height of the individuals and everything, a shotgun, a handgun, you know, it's just very disturbing to me. So we're going to bring on Scott really quickly. And we do need to still remember Juan. So we're definitely going to get Juan on before we are off tonight. All right, so let's try to get Scott on here now. Scott, are you on the line?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Scott. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Okay, so can you tell us what you recollect that night, that day?
What I recollect? I actually recollect everything from, from front to back, It's kind of hard to kind of talk about it because it was very traumatic. You know, I was a kid. I was only 17 years old, and I've never been through anything like that before or after.
Wow.
But we did hear it was my sister's house. It was a really bad area. Like, during that time, the 90s was really bad in that area. And we're just hanging out, a bunch of friends, at my sister's apartment. It was on the second story, like a, you know, apartment building. And we heard the gunshots, and they sounded like they're really far away, like maybe like a block away, not too far, but like about a block. And, we heard gunshots almost there. It was a daily thing. So we just didn't pay attention. And before we knew it, the SWAT team was there, helicopter was there, and it was huge. It was, yeah. But I know for a fact in my heart, and, you know, I'll go to the grave with it knowing that when we heard the gunshots, Tony was sitting across from me, like, you know, 6 feet away from me. All of us were all like together. So if somebody was not there, we would know, but he was right there. And yeah, I mean, I could go into like immense detail about it, but, I don't know how much detail you want me to go into, but.
Oh, that's good enough. That's good enough.
Yeah.
I'll let you really be able to expound more on the podcast. You'll be able to expound longer. But thank you so much for sharing that. And, you know, at the age of 17 to experience such a traumatic experience, my heart goes out to you as well.
Hey,
all right.
We got a lot of callers on this line right now, and we're not trying to go into midnight. So we're going to try to get these callers on, and I know, you know what I mean, we're going to get these callers on. That's what we're going to do. 323 on the line right now with your show, Janicia. All callers only have 4 minutes. You go over the 4 minutes, you will be cut off.
All right, you're live on the Air News Forum.
All right, we go to the next caller right now. All right,
go to the next
caller. You're on the line right now with News Forum and Chinchilla Jonesia.
Caller, you're live on the air. All right, you better speak up.
I think a lot of times chinchilla, what they don't know is when they press, you know, one, it's supposed to talk. So we'll try that again. Okay. All right, the next caller.
Okay.
Call you on the line right now in loose form, chinchilla.
All right, caller, you're live on the air.
Wow, we got a lot of callers that don't know the whole situation. Let's get people on that know what time it is. How about that? Caller, you're on the line with Chinchilla Jonesia.
Peace and blessings, Chinchilla.
How are you, Sister Bessie?
Hi, and congratulations to your record. I wanted to say to you, thank you for bringing your guests on and allowing us to hear their stories. We see that the justice system is still unfair to us and many other people in the U.S. But I wanted to ask you a question because we all know how many black men are in prison, 4.5 million. But have you found out how many Latinos are in prison today?
I don't know. I don't know the number, the actual number of that. I don't.
Yes. Okay. Well, I guess I'm going to have to look that up for myself. I also wanted to say we have a system now in law enforcement that is like the Minority Report. You are considered guilty before you can defend yourself. You know, we're seeing that over the internet where people are being stopped and presumed guilty before they even have a chance to defend themselves. And, you know, when I watched that movie, I realized this is really going on all over the world and maybe in the U.S. And I just wanted to say, our past president, Obama, put something in called prolonged detention. So if they arrest you, they can keep you in jail for 6 to 3 years without you going to court. And I wanted to know what you thought about that. And I am enjoying your show. I love you dearly, and I love the information that you bring to the listeners. Thank you so much.
Thank you as well, Sister Bessie. Thank you so much. Okay, so we're going to go ahead and get this other call, these other callers on. So we have, I think, Richard. I think we have Richard on now. Caller, you're live on the air with News Forum.
I am online. Yes, I'm Richard Verdugo. And
hi, Richard.
I was calling in reference to a friend of mine, Tony Antonio Chavez, who was wrongly convicted back in 94, 95. And for us, you know, I mean, that was a very traumatic experience being caught in a lineup that their only description was a tall Hispanic male and a short, fat Hispanic male. And for that day when we were in the lineup, it was my buddy Tony, a tall Hispanic male, and myself that were over 6 foot, and two other buddies. That, so there are basically four of us that fitted that description for the lineup. Unbeknown to us what was going on, that a murder had just taken place. A young male had lost his life a few apartments over from where we was at. And, man, I'm shaking right now just even reliving that moment. Because, I mean, that's a young man's life that was lost for something that did not do. That we were all adamant we were inside an apartment having a party, enjoying a friend's, I believe it was his birthday, and he had just been released too. So to be in that predicament, get caught up like that, be railroaded by LAPD, you know, there was no evidence, no GSR residue on any one of our hands or our person, being denied representation by a lawyer while we were being questioned for hours upon hours. At best of my recollection, it was more than 8-9 hours of intense interrogation, being sleep deprived that whole night and morning. For my friend, you know, this is the guy that I've known since I was about 9, 10 years, maybe 12 years old, somewhere within that ballpark range of 6th to 7th grade, I met them. And growing up with somebody for that long in your life, you tend to know who and what they are. And that man was that. He was not a killer, neither one of them. And for them to be wrongfully convicted, you know, I mean, and railroaded like that, kind of goes to show how the justice system works. When you are a person of color and of, I wanted to say we was poor, but we were middle class. Our parents always worked, but, you know, we were still considered poor, a poor working class. And for that to happen and still be this 25-some-plus years later and he's still incarcerated and not allowed to bring up any of that evidence again and have it retested, it's just, you know, it's a shame. And, you know, I hope he can be able to finally see some sort of justice served on his head.
Yes, definitely. I hope so, too. You know, after the show, I definitely will get in touch with Yvonne to give her information for people down in California that may be able to help with Antonio's case. And thank you so much, Richard, for sharing tonight. And my heart goes out to you. I could hear the emotions in your voice. And, wow, it's just terrible, just terrible. So thank you so much for sharing tonight. And I hope you will be on the podcast when we do the podcast on Wednesday. We're going to go to Pedro, who is the brother of Antonio. Pedro is a law enforcement officer and also in the military. Pedro, how are you tonight? Pedro, how are you tonight? You're live on the air with News Forum.
Okay, we tried to get these callers in. We're going to keep on going, you know. That's what happens, Chinchilla, when you, you know, you're out there doing your thing, man. People want to talk to you. So, next caller, you're online right now.
All right, caller, you're live on the air with News Forum. You're live on the air with News Forum.
All right, we go to the next caller.
Okay.
All right, caller, you're online right now with News Forum with Chinchilla Jonicia. Okay, guys, this
All
is
right,
what happens.
Caller.
I know you guys come into the – hold on. We have no more callers. You come on the line, guys, and you press 1. That means you want to speak. So we're going to go back to our wonderful, wonderful attorney to get final thoughts and then go into Ngozi time. Caroline, talk to us.
Hi. Yes, I did actually was able to see some of the legal documents on this case, Antonio Chavez's case. And there was a claim for ineffective assistance of counsel. Because there was a whole load of prejudicial evidence introduced into the trial that should not have been introduced. There was also really tainted eyewitness testimony. The two girls were discussing what they would say, and they were looking at the pictures together, and you can't do that. So there was a whole load of things in this case that violated due process, and I don't understand why it wasn't overturned, because as regards the identification procedures and introducing evidence of gangs, which was highly prejudicial and not even relevant to the case, I'd love to know how this case ended up, except that he's still in jail, because it looks like on the ineffective assistance of counsel petition, it looks like they decided there were numerous errors in the trial. So there was a new trial, I'm presuming, because this was 1998. So I would love to know how this ended up and what happened at the next trial. But from what I've seen, there were so many bad procedures that led to this conviction of Antonio Chavez. Again, I would love to say it's shocking that this stuff happens all the time. It's still shocking, though. So I don't know if anybody on the call can tell us what eventually happened when it got its new trial, except that the poor guy's still in jail, so that can't have gone very well either. But if there is anyone on the call who could tell us that, that would be great.
Okay. Wow. Now, Pedro, the brother of Antonio, is on the call, but he didn't say anything when his line was unmuted. But Yvonne is saying that he is on her line. Okay, so Pedro, if you're on there, we need you to say something so that we can hear you. Okay, because we didn't hear you at all. So if you're on, we need you to speak so that we can hear what you have to say. Pedro is Antonio's brother. He's a law enforcement officer. So, Pedro, are you on? Okay, if not, we're going to go to Juan, who is the son of Pedro Reynoso, who's been waiting to talk about his dad. So we're going to go to Juan Alexander. Juan, you're live on the Air with News Forum. How are you tonight?
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm serving as an interpreter for him.
Okay. All right. So Juan, okay, ask him, like, what does he remember? I mean, has he seen his dad? How old is Juan now?
¿Cuántos años tiene?
34.
He's 34 right now.
¿Y cuándo tuviste tu papá?
Okay, so he was 1 year old when his dad was arrested and convicted.
¿Cuántos años tú tenías cuando los llevaron?
7 años.
He was 7 when that happened.
Oh, he was 7?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm getting the cases confused here. Okay, yeah, he's been in for 27 years. Okay. Yeah. Okay. And Juan, how has it been for you with your dad wrongfully incarcerated, knowing that he was not even in this country at the time that those murders took place? How has this been for you? What kind of effect has it had on you?
¿Cómo te ha afectado? Que tú no, que él, sabiendo que él no estaba, todo ha sido bien fuerte para mí.
Everything has been hard for me.
Estar a los 7 años de edad.
Been 7 years old at the time.
Y no volverlo a ver nunca más hasta los 23 años, vamos a decir.
He didn't see him again till he was
23.
30.
Y
wow.
Perder mi madre.
He lost his mom.
En el proceso de que nació también mi hermana.
In the process where his sister was born too.
Cuando él estaba allá.
When he was inside.
Y no entiendo la injusticia que están haciendo con mi padre.
And he doesn't understand the injustice that's being done to his father.
Wow. And when is the last time that you saw your dad?
¿No fue la última vez que tuviste a tu papá?
En Estados Unidos. Hace un año cuando empezó la pandemia.
A year ago when the pandemic began.
Since the pandemic began? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Okay. Whew, boy. Wow. Well, I thank you so much, Juan, for sharing this with us tonight, and I thank you for interpreting for him tonight. And,
no problem.
Definitely, I will definitely get you guys back on and get you on the podcast as well. And my heart goes out to you, Juan, and I hope and pray that your father is released soon, very soon, so that you can, you know, spend time with your dad, because you definitely need your dad. And again, thank you so much for sharing with us tonight. And now I'm going to try to get Pedro back on here, because Pedro, every time we unmuted his line for him to talk, he didn't say anything. And so, Pedro, we're going to try to get you on here again. And if not, you know, the producer, he is trying to get you on, and we tried twice already. And we didn't have any luck with hearing you say anything. And I know that you want to talk on your brother's behalf, being that you are in law enforcement. So we're going to try one more time. So, Brother O, can you try to get Pedro back on the line again, please?
Well, first of all, I want to thank everybody that's been on the show tonight. Since it's been so wonderful, and I really appreciate everybody that's on this line. And he's on Evelyn's line, you say?
No, on Yvonne's line. He was on her line, I think, yeah.
Okay. All right, let's go back to the 262 line right now. We're going to try to get this right now. And here is Pedro. Let's get it.
Pedro, you're live on the air. How are you tonight?
All right, there. That was the line.
Okay, the 6548.
I don't what's going on there.
6548. Brother, it's the 6548.
The 6548 is the last number? Okay, here we go.
Yeah,
all right, it is Pedro. Let's get it. Hey, Pedro.
Hi, how are you? This is Pedro.
Hi, Pedro. Finally, we got you finally. Okay, how are you tonight?
Yeah, finally. I'm doing good, thank you.
All right. And now, can you tell me, now you're in law enforcement, you're in the military. Now, how can you expound on your brother's case tonight?
Growing up in the same neighborhood in the 90s, it was kind of rough. I was profiled several times by LAPD itself and taken in for things only to the end to be dismissed with no real allegations. It was during that time where I decided to be a law enforcement officer only because it would take me to be a law enforcement officer to make a change. And I've seen a lot of misconduct, and even today as a 14-year veteran in law enforcement, of a lot of misconduct within law enforcement. So it's definitely a challenge, but, you know, one can only do so much.
Wow. Okay. Now, with your brother's case, what are your feelings and thoughts right now?
Well, it's very stressful to have a brother incarcerated and not being able to do anything about it, to the point where, you know, the communication between myself and my brother is very minimal. Sometimes it's just easier to, you know, cut ties and not have that stress. But, you know, we grew up in a family. Tony would never harm anybody. He was always willing to help. It's sad. It's sad to see that, you know, we're helpless. And in a long time, this has been one of the platforms where we're able to talk about Tony's wrongfully conviction. And there's a lot of evidence, but it seems like nobody wants to hear evidence that would help Tony. In the contrary, they want to hear everything that goes against them. And nobody wants to hear, even though we have the victims, we have alibis, there's evidence, forensic evidence that, you know, helped Tony, but nobody wants to look at that.
Wow. Okay, and so you're saying that so this is the first time that you guys have had a platform to talk about Antonio's case?
At least in a public forum, yes.
Okay. Okay, well, I am glad that you all were able to come on tonight and to share and talk about Antonio. This is, you know, the case is just, you know, something that is, it definitely needs to be revisited by the court systems, and definitely they need to definitely try to get DNA testing done in the case as well. And I know, I think Yvonne, let's see, she's messaging me now. She wanted to talk about the shotgun. And she's saying that it was supposed to be in the left arm or the right arm, but her brother's right-handed, and the suspect held it in the left arm and shot with the left arm based on the investigation. And, you know, that's something,
may I
too,
say something
that really needs to be addressed. Yes, you may.
Okay, so, yeah, the shotgun or the rifle, because they were never clear, that was never fired. It's just supposedly it was used to assault, like, point at certain people there. But the witness, the alleged witness, Marlene, said that the person held it on the left hand. And another discrepancy with the first suspect was that his back was positioned to the girls that were witnesses. And they said, no, I couldn't see the gun. But then in court, they try and change the story, which is Marlena saying, I saw it. So even though they brought the interrogation records on, all that was overlooked, especially by the jurors. Another thing I want to mention is that in the beginning, they were substituting jurors. So from the beginning to end in such a complex and critical case, not the same jurors were maintained. And at one point, there was mass confusion to who shot, who had the gun. Was it done jointly, or was it an accomplice after the fact issue? And the judge at one point said, let them fight it out between themselves, because they had no concrete evidence and there was so much confusion. Another thing that LAPD tried to do is gang profile my brother and Jose and said, you know, that they were gang members. So,
and they tried
defense,
to discredit all the witnesses that were there that night.
Yes, and then
wow.
You know, the way they were treated was just to scare them. And when one of the alibis gave consent for their apartment to be searched, it was under duress. And in the interrogation, she keeps saying, I was scared, what are you guys going to do to me? Like, so, and then they had her sign the paper trying to give them consent. So that should have been thrown out, but that wasn't, you know, looked at. I was 14 at the time, as was the victim. So I wasn't aware of much, but now that I study the case, which I have, it's like there's a lot of, you know, and discrepancies, and also perjury. Like the witnesses committed perjury on the stand. Also, LAPD Detective Vargas, I don't know if he's still on, but he said on the stand that one of the girlfriend, that she said both of them had a gun. In her interrogation and on testimony, she's always been consistent, and she's very firm. She won't let herself be pushed around or made to lie. And each time she said one had a gun. First time in their interrogation, it was fresh in her head. She said the shorter one had a gun. So the second suspect, which would be my brother Antonio, she never saw anything. And these guys were walking right past by her, you know. And all the while, my brother is in a different area around the corner with his friends having a good time drinking when all this is going on outside. And you know, when they try to gang profile him as a Rockwood Outsiders, there's no such thing. Outsiders is actually a party crew. And Rockwood is a gang in another district, in another area, basically. And they had Detective Robert Lopez go on the stand, which thankfully the judge caught and he discredited. He said, no, it's prejudice. I'm not going to allow it. So on record, he said, there's nothing tying Mr. Chavez to Rockwood, and there's nothing tying Rockwood to Outsiders, but somehow that label has preceded him. In court, when he went for his appeal, even though they didn't have, you know, enough information to support the confidential information, and they said it, the mom was there, the victim's mom was there, they knew, so they brought all the dirty, you know, tricks that they could to make my brother appear like this monster. But the mom understands, she grew up in the same area, and she said, although he's made mistakes, he did not commit this murder. You know, and even with that, they didn't care. So initially they said, we're going to consider the life sentence, but then in their conclusion, because the mom spoke on his behalf, they're like, we are no longer going to factor that in. And they said that, we're not going to factor it in. And it didn't matter, you know, they tried to get away with, yeah, you're a gang member, you're a Sureño. They went as far as even saying worse things than that. But at the end, in their conclusion, they said, well, we don't have enough information to consider, because it's true. Asker versus governor of California, I think when it was Brown was the governor, they had a whole lawsuit happen where they were using confidentials to, you know, elicit false information, and it could never be proved. So what happened is that a lot of them were gang profiled and sent to the SHU with unjust and undue punishment. So the fact that even that there's a lawsuit existing and they try to enter that to have the mom turn against my brother, I mean, that is the worst. So even, yes, it happened in 1996, still corruption. Okay, 98, that's when it was decided. And even now, it's like to know that the board refuses when they have, through Penal Code 1170, they have every right to refer for a resentence or a recall. But they refuse to see it because they painted my brother as, yeah, you're violent. I mean, his last rule violation was in 2020 for wine. I mean, who doesn't drink wine? I almost drink it every day. I couldn't drink it all day long if I wanted to, you know. Before that, his last violent associated one was in 2013, but that was for having supposedly a manufactured weapon. But we don't know if it was in his cell or on his person because I never got into detail like that. So they try to say that he's violent, but that's what he has on his record, a manufactured, you know, weapon. And before that, involved in two riots and then a fight. So you're trying to tell me these, you know, these violations from a long time ago, some from 1990s or early 2000s, I mean, and then one in 2013, and they still want to carry that label on. So it's just, it's still wrong. And even though the injustice started with LAPD, I mean, it's still prevalent right now in the prison system. And I'm a forensic psychology student. I mean, I'm not an expert on this, but I did pursue my master's, and I was able to break down the comprehensive risk assessment. I caught on to so many things that I cannot believe what happened. So I basically got everybody involved, from Board of Psychology, from, you know, the Forensic Assessment Division, CDC, BPH, the Board of Prison Hearings. So it's like, I don't understand how they can't open their eyes and say, okay, the mom, their surviving victim is coming up. Can't we refer this to resentencing? Thankfully, we have, you know, someone on my brother's side, which is the public defender. I reopened the case. It's reopened again with the DA, but under the prior district attorney and under the prior administration, we were always declined. I mean, I've been fighting this since a long time, and LAPD says, oh, you're smart, but we got to understand, you know, your brother has a record. So they try to, you know, and one time I opened an IA, and the detective just intimidated me to the point where we were arguing, and I said, I want to stop this because you're manipulating everything. I just don't see why this can't be looked at and all the inconsistencies, because again, Lyleen, which is one of the witnesses, she didn't see anything from Marlene. Marlene told me, she was like, you know what? She was in no position to have seen. So like I said earlier, she just adopted everything that she said. And they were allowed to converse in the patrol car. They were alone before they were alone, and even after the fact, they were alone. And, you know, in court, the officer said, yes, I had to interrupt them because they were talking. And they picked my brother and Antonio because, oh, he's tall and he's bald because, you know, the other one has hair, so it's not him. And then for Jose, the same thing. Oh, you know, because of his clothes. Not once did they say, I recognize his face. You know, even one of the witnesses, too, she didn't recognize one of them in court. So I just don't understand why the system can't say, we messed up, how can we fix it? It just gets thrown off on one entity to another.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you know, this whole, the whole criminal justice system in this country is just so very flawed. But as I've been saying recently, it's not really flawed. It's designed to do what it's designed to do. And it's been doing what they wanted to do for all these years. And that's wrongfully incarcerate people of color. But it's not just people of color, because there are people of all races that are being wrongfully incarcerated as well, but people of color at a more alarming rate. And it's a very sad situation, and it is very hard to get these court systems and everybody to look at a case again, to look and see what they've done wrong. And, you know, thank God that now there are conviction integrity units being set up in various cities now. And with that taking place, more cases will begin to be reviewed. And now you're out there in San Diego. So there's people in California that I can actually get you guys in touch with to see if they can help get your brother's case looked at. They would, you know, look over all the documentations and see if there is, you know, a case, you know, to be made for him to be exonerated. So, you know, this is something that's very strenuous. It, you know, it's tedious. It's, you know, it's a lot of work that goes into these cases. And your brother has been in there now for 24 years. And that is a long time. That's a long time. And, you know, if your brother's innocent, he definitely needs to be out of there, along with Pedro Reynoso and also along with Mike Swift. And, you know, these cases are always very upsetting and frustrating every time I hear such cases. And, you know, my heart goes out to you, Yvonne, and to your family. I thank you for coming on tonight and sharing your brother's story. I am glad that this was a platform for you to do that, and for your brother to take the time out to call in as well, your brother's two friends, Scott and Richard. And wow, I will definitely, Maggie, I thank you also for coming on to the show, and Evelyn as well, and Caroline. We'll definitely be looking over your brother's case as well, and we will consult with each other and see what can be done on his behalf. So, again, I thank you for coming on tonight, and that's it for tonight, and I will definitely be in touch with you about the podcast on Wednesday, where you can share even more and, you know, have more people come on and share more. Tonight, it's like 11:30. Show started at 9:30. We've been on here for 2 hours, which is well over time. We went into like overtime, like a football game. All right. But I thank my producer for tonight for allowing us to go this long. Thank you so much, Brother O. So at this time, it will be Ngozi time, and then I will be right back at you with my final thoughts. And Caroline, thank you so much for us coming on tonight and giving your thoughts into these cases.
Well, first of all, I want to thank Chichilla Jonesia. Yeah, I'm here. I'm always here. I want to thank Chichilla Jonesia for her ministry. And she's been steadfast in this. A lot of people have been helped by this show and this franchise of News Forum, dating back to February 5th, 2013. And for me, being the first anchor in News Forum, I want to thank Chinchilla for what she does on a constant basis every week, like I used to. There's nothing different. News Forum was a weekly program, and it is today. All the people that came on tonight that shared their stories and had to get back on here to be able to expound upon what they feel is wrong. The criminal justice system in the United States of America will still be tested by people who know what's right. Tomorrow night on these stations, we have a Bev Nat classic. I have not decided what it's going to be, but it will be 9:30 Eastern, daylight time on these stations. And, of course, Seven Nation is advertising to ONE, which is on the Deli and Goes Enterprise Reach, of course, at www.lookingglassentertainment.wordpress.com, as well as Ngozi Primetime on that, Devnet.com. We're Ngozi Time both for Twitter and Instagram. Ola Deli Ngozi appearance on Google Plus. Ola Deli and Malaria Ngozi at Facebook, as well as our business page, News Forum, as well as the historic Devon Nation Online Radio established 2013. And any comments, suggestions, or one for program tonight, olaydaylay.ngozi@mind.gmail.com. And I am your mother and father's favorite producer, Ola Deli and Malaria Ngozi, saying good night and good luck. For all the folks out there in Armed Forces Radio that support us on a constant basis, two things. Also, I want to mention myself as the International Internet Radio Producing Enshrinee for the class of 2021. And congratulations to Chinchilla Jay on tying the all-time new host record with now. She holds it with Tara Strength. Outstanding job tonight by her. And I am very, very, very pleased. And now back to her for the last 2 minutes. Let's go in this wonderful program tonight.
All right. Thank you so much, Brother O. And once again, I would like to thank my special guests tonight, Caroline Turner, Evelyn Reynoso, Yvonne Chavez, and Maggie Swift for sharing their stories tonight. On July 23rd will be the next big Criminal Justice Reborn rally in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. If you would all like to get involved with that, you can find out how. Just take a listen. Thank you to all my faithful listeners and supporters for tuning in to another episode of News Forum with Chinchilla J. Please feel free to follow me on Instagram at Princess Chinchilla, that's PRINCESSCHINCHILA. Follow me and like me on Facebook at Chinchilla Jonicia, CHINCHILA JONESIA. Like and follow Mike Test Entertainment TV's page, that's MIC space TEST space Entertainment space TV. Are you a fighter? Are you a warrior? Would you like to become part of Criminal Justice Reborn, or Right the Wrong Coalition, or Voices for the Wrongfully Incarcerated, or Exoneration Compensation Advocates? We need more voices, and we're asking you to be a voice. For more information, you may dial 844-642-8378, extension 888. Again, that number is 844-642-8378. To be a guest on News Forum or on Mike Test Entertainment TV, you may also dial the same number. Again, this is your girl Chinchilla J. Thank you for tuning in. See you next week. Same time, same place. Have a productive week on purpose.